Welcome to the Mark and Embark podcast by Scout My Trip. This is your host, Vineet Rajan. A big thank you for all those joining in the no-nonsense podcast about road tripping in India and beyond. Each episode will exclusively dwell deep into destinations on and off the highways, hidden gems, automotive news, road tripping people, and how to road trip smartly. Come, let's mark and embark on a road trip. Hi, welcome back to the Mark and Embark podcast by Scout My Trip. The episode 7 is back. We're sorry, it took us a while. The last interview was with Mr. Dilip Sawant, tuned in by over 13,000 people all over the world, and it was an amazing story to talk about. Today, we're taking it one level more by bringing in two very, very interesting people who have road tripped across the world. And let me introduce Nidhi Tiwari and Colonel Satinder Malik, who run Wander Beyond Boundaries, and the literally wandering beyond all boundaries that we can talk about. In fact, there is one very interesting trip that they are going for. It's called the Pole of Cold, and it's quite an amazing trip. Sati, Nidhi, all yours. Why don't you quickly, tell us about who you are, and this is especially for people who might not know you.
So I'm Nidhi. I'm primarily an extreme terrain driver by profession, also an outdoor educator, and have been undertaking first of its kind expeditions all over the world for many years now. And I think what excites me the most about this medium is how you get to challenge yourself both within and outside of yourself. I think oftentimes the within part gets left out, but yeah. That's what takes me beyond boundaries, literally, figuratively. And it's been so for the last 10-15 years.
Hi, I'm Colonel Sati Malik. I served with the army for about 24 years. And then I decided to hang my uniform to go into higher challenges. Since Nidhi and self, we had been in touch for quite some time, maybe about almost 4 years now. So over a period of time, we realized that we had a lot of common interests, especially related to adventure, outdoors, driving, overlanding, expeditionary. So there the interests sort of got together, and then we decided to take on and create Wander Beyond Boundaries, which we launched last year.
Congratulations on that. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Nidhi, this is for you. So, you were the first woman to drive a transcontinental distance, Delhi to London, if I'm right, correct?
Yes.
When was this? Which year was this?
This was in 2015. This was the first all-women expedition by road from Delhi to London, and was the solo driver on that, and I had two teammates find me intermittently. And it was a distance of 23,800 kilometers. Was at a time when this route was not as frequented or talked about or easy to, get information on, literally. So it was mammoth in itself. And I think it broke like a huge boundary in my head that this was possible. And there was no stopping after that.
Which car did you drive, Nidhi, this trip?
At that time, it was a Scorpio. I drove a Scorpio, a second-hand Scorpio. Wow. Because those days, nobody was willing to risk a new car or sponsor me with a new car. And not that I come from, a background where I have financial muscle or otherwise, the wherewithal otherwise to be able to do this on my own. But yes, it was a sheer show of perseverance and I guess just not giving up, to make it happen.
That's been one of the most inspiring things personally, I've also come across. We keep hearing about women who want to kind of do this trip. In fact, I think there's one group of women bikers who's doing this Bombay to London.
Yes.
But I think it all started with you, Nidhi. Colonel Malik, you said that you wanted to look for higher challenges. Could you elaborate on that? Are you saying that road tripping is tougher than being in the army?
I have been part of the army for 24 years. Before that, I was a hostler from class 1. So it's a kind of 41 years of challenging life.
Okay.
So after so much of time, I realized the kind of assignments that in future, with the rank that I had attained, would be somewhat not likable by me because of the outdoor life that I want to live.
Okay.
Okay. So this stream, and obviously I've had interest in outdoor world. That's how I live. I cannot live in confined spaces, do a 9-to-5 job on a table. So this was the reason that how this thing happened. And obviously, yes, the kind of challenges that I, for future that I was looking for, obviously there's the amount of uncertainty involved. However, it is challenging. You have to think through it. You have to process it properly. And then you have to come out on tops. Yes, definitely for the appointment that I was holding, yes, it definitely was a higher challenge.
Very interesting. Very interesting. In fact, before, you know, we finally get deep into the pool of cold and know more about this trip and, you know, what all is going to happen, how did you both come together? I mean, did you guys meet over a trip or how did it all start?
Well, I've known Sati for a while now. I think primarily what kind of brought us together was our interest, common interest in adventure and outdoors. And a common need to push oneself. I think both of us come from that state wherein it is about pushing oneself and trying to, you know, get across and grow internally as well. So I think it's that spirit that kind of brought us together. And what better way than to manifest, you know, when overlanding, I think, is a beautiful medium. And extreme terrain takes it one notch up. Yeah, and given our skill sets and where we were coming from, it was a natural progression to form boundaries.
So let's quickly dive into the pool of cold. You know, you call it the Trans-Siberian Overland Expedition to the edge of the world. What's this edge of the world? I mean, is it actually as you describe it?
Okay, so the nomenclature is from a time when people thought the world was flat. Wherein, if you notice on the map, even today, Russia's far east, which borders the Bering Strait and across which is the American landmass, that used to be considered the edge of the world simply because if you laid out the map flat, that would be your edge in terms of the map.
Eastern edge of the world map.
So, this area, in the Sakha Republic and further on to Magadan Oblast, which is further east, is Russia's far east, considered the most formidable geographic region in the world. Historic it is, simply because it's the only area on planet Earth which comes close and in fact, which wherein we draw a lot from the last ice ages. Because the land is such, it's completely permafrost, which means it's frozen earth, which means it's frozen soil. So you have permafrost happens in three layers. So you have an active, passive, and the ice, hard ice. So this is one special area on Earth wherein you have an active permafrost layer, which is your frozen soil, which freezes and defreezes seasonally. You have a passive layer, which is eternally frozen soil. And then you have below that hard ice, which is only melted by the heat from the core of the Earth. So that's the layers of soil in this region, as opposed to what we have here. So this pretty much means there is no agriculture per se. There is, the roads are permafrost roads. It's a very, very new reality from where we are coming from. People, the resilience, I think it's fascinating where it's coming from.
So what do people do here? I mean, it's the coldest habitated place in the world. Am I right?
Yes. In fact, in 2016, I was fortunate to successfully undertake India's first overland solo to the Pole of Cold. But my expedition was in the peak of winters. People still say bordered madness and foolishness. But I guess explorations and first of its kind, they get accused of that all the time. But I was able to reach the Pole of Cold. I was the first Indian to drive to the Pole of Cold. That's where the context comes from, and that's where the confidence comes from to embark on this upcoming expedition in September this year. The people here, they've been primarily Arctic communities. Sakha has the Yakutia people. So Yakutia is one of the Arctic tribes from the Russian Arctic. Primarily people here from a livelihood standpoint, they fish. The area is very, very, very rich in natural resources. So be it fish that goes all over Russia from these regions, they do a lot of horse farming, horse breeding and farming, because they eat horse meat. There is a lot of reindeer farming that happens again as livestock, because these communities were livestock herders. Otherwise, of late, I think in the last 50 odd years, this area, given that it's so rich in mineral resources, there's been a lot of mining, a lot of gold, uranium, copper, manganese. So Russia has deployed a considerable amount of resource in these regions to, you know, extract mineral resources. That's where its significance comes from.
Put a parallel to this region to somewhere in India. What would be the place which comes closest to this region?
I don't think any comes closest, because simply because, you know, this is an area where the population density is like 3 people a kilometer. Wow, I can even imagine an area of this nature in India. It is just brutally remote.
Spoke about the soil. So it's special to this place alone, is that it?
Yes, yes. This region in the world, yes. This is where you have last remnants of the Ice Age, and this is the only region. Permafrost exists in smaller pockets, but this is the largest shelf we have on Earth.
I mean, just thinking of all the permafrost and, the frozen soil, driving must be quite a madness here, right? I mean, I think we should start off with, you know, how you actually completed that solo trip of yours. I mean, there are so many challenges you would have faced. And were you on a 4-wheel drive or were you on a 2-wheel drive? I think we need to know all the nitty-gritty details.
About the 2016 solo, well, that was, it was a single vehicle, no backup. I was driving a Toyota Land Cruiser Prado 4-wheel drive, drove 2,500 kilometers one way on the same route from Yakutsk to Magadan. This road is historically called the Road of Bones. It was built during Stalin's time, and it's infamous because here's where all his gulags were located, which is, Stalin's version of concentration camps for political prisoners. So this is the Siberian wilderness, so to speak. And when people, and his dream was to connect the Far East, given how resource-rich it was with the rest of Russia. So he wanted to build this road, and it kind of became infamous and was called the Road of Bones because people just died. And when people, and given how brutal the winters are, and given how hard life is, and people died in thousands, and there was no way you could bury them because it's all frozen anyways. So they just kept putting more and more, you know, frozen earth over these dead bodies. And so, today, the Road of Bones, as it stands over thousands and thousands of bones. Wow. So, that's the section from Yakutsk to Magadan. Our upcoming expedition is driving the same section. A short detour from this, the Yakutsk to Magadan road goes straight east, and it reaches Magadan, which is on the coast. A short detour is Oymyakon, which is the Pole of Cold. When we say the Pole of Cold, it's the coldest inhabited place on Earth. Which has been, recognized so with geographic data for the last like 50, 60 years. So Oymyakon has seen, the lowest temperature Oymyakon has seen is -71.6 in the peak of winters.
Wow.
And when I drove there in 2016, the lowest I experienced, I did that in the peak of winters too. The lowest I experienced was -60, and trust me, that was something else. It was, I don't think I knew what I was signing up for when I embarked on that particular expedition. It came very close to showing me the edge of my threshold internally. It was very, very brutal, intense, but I guess a milestone for life.
So when people go out for this this trip with you, what are they driving? Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be driving basically a combination. We're going to have four vehicles. And, you know, organizing this expedition has been a logistical circus, so to speak, because, you know, there is one of the reasons it's never happened before is because Northern Siberia does not have self-drive cars. You know, we're having to bring up the cars, and Sati knows a lot more about that since we've been planning and putting this together.
I'm sure there is a lot more that goes through it, but I think just the fact that this is happening for the first time to such a place, and like Nidhi said, there is self-drive is not possible at all. How have you actually made this possible?
Okay, for the last couple, when we decided upon that we have to do this expedition to the Pole of Cold, so the first thing was, how do we do it? Where do the vehicles come from? So we did a lot of research from the entire Siberian region, checked up with a lot of companies there, checked up with a lot of individuals. It did not work out. So then we were forced into look outwards. So finally we were able, the nearest place from where we could hire reliable vehicles was from Kyrgyzstan. So it implies that we will be driving these vehicles 7,000 kilometers from Kyrgyzstan to Omicron, to Yakutsk, from where the expedition will start.
My God. So there are just two of you driving four cars. How?
No.
So we are arranging for people, because we will have an entire service backup team, because such expeditions cannot be done alone. There has to be thought through. You have to have mechanical as well as medical backup for this entire expedition to make it successful, because we want to pitch it for success, not for failure.
Of course.
All these things have to be thought through. So we have people who will be driving along with us for us to reach the start point. So it basically implies for us, for the two of us, it is going to be a 20,000 kilometers expedition.
I saw that this particular trip, a person has to pay around 6 lakh, if I'm not wrong, to join the trip.
Yeah, you know, this is something that we're struggling with. The whole idea, so where we come from, Vineet, is a standpoint of just people who are passionate drivers and who want to go beyond boundaries.
Actually, I have a different point to make here. Considering the fact that you're getting vehicles from a country which is 7,000 kilometers away, from a different country, right?
Yes.
You're doing all this, don't you think you're underpricing this?
I don't think we are in here for the sheer business of it, because at the end of the day, it's also about affordability and, you know, passion and money. I don't know if they go together all the time, even for participants. So we've been trying to work backwards. We've been doing all kinds of permutations and combinations to see that we try and keep the costs as basic as possible, so that many more interested, genuinely interested, passionate drivers are able to join us on this one. The idea was to make it accessible, affordable, and make it happen to begin with.
I mean, I think that says quite a lot about where both of you come from. Is this how you plan to continue doing this? I mean, this is going to continue being a passion project then?
Yes, definitely. With time, it will be people who will guide that, the economics part of it. Because on our first expedition, one of the major takeaways that was given to us, a feedback point, was that you are too underpriced. You will go down under economically. Please jack up the price.
Yeah. And it's heartening when people actually recognize the effort and they see the effort that's gone into it. And then they come back to you and say, hey, you know what? You should charge more for this and you're underpricing it. And in our heads, we go, well, we kind of knew what it took to put this team together. But yeah, hopefully next time.
So what can one expect on this trip? I mean, could you take us through the route and what people are going to see? And
okay, so let's split this in two ways. I will talk about the route, etc. And Sati, maybe you should begin by sharing about how, what people should expect from an experience standpoint and what they should expect from a mental and, you know, from a mindset standpoint.
From an expedition point of view, this is going to be very different. People are used to road trips or holiday packages. That's how holidaying or going on vacation works.
Yeah.
This is completely, completely different from that. This is an expedition which is happening, wherein people will be expected to take on team roles, wherein they will be pushed to their boundaries every day in every aspect related to life, and draw life lessons from it in terms of to be able to implement it in their daily lives. Example, a major example will be food, because we are so much used to spices and the area that we are going to is completely devoid of spices. That's a major challenge that everybody will have to take on in their head first and then implement it on ground. Another will be the cold. We are not used to the cold. Therein, the maximum temperature at the time that we are going will be about 5 degrees and minimum will go to minus 20. However, they will also have to imagine the time of peak winters wherein temperature touches minus 60. They will be forced into changing their habits for that time period. So it gives in the aspect of adaptability. You cannot deny nature its natural course. It will do what it has to. We as human beings have to make that change.
We have to work around it.
Yes.
Just to add to what he said, I think the primary difference between a road trip and an expedition, if I can just take a moment to put that together, I think expeditions they come with their sense of adventure and uncertainty. Not that road trips don't, but these push the envelope. When I say uncertainty, adventure and all of that, while yes, it sounds romantic and you know, fascinating, I think it comes with an underbelly of absolute toil and discomfort and having to bear with chaos and situations where you don't know where it's leading. So yeah. I think that's the mental flexibility and adaptability that Sati also was talking about. And that will kind of prevail over everything else on an expedition like this.
I like the fact that you mentioned that everybody needs to be hands-on and participative. Mm-hmm. I think that is one very crucial element which kind of separates what you guys are doing compared to anything else that happens. Because there are a lot of incumbent players also which are into overland road trips or expeditions to different countries, but I think this is as raw as it can get.
Absolutely.
And I can imagine everyone who's on this trip, you know, getting their hands dirty. I'm sure there'll be situations wherein you'll have a flat tire or, you know, some issues. And I can imagine people kind of coming together and working together as a team.
You know, it's in a far more formal manner, in fact, on our expeditions, on WBB expeditions, we take on team roles on a daily basis. So which means there are going to be those many members who will volunteer or will have to take on that role for, you know, a day or two, wherein if they're going to be in charge of food, they're going to be planning the food and making sure that everybody eats and gets stuff, nutritious food to eat. We have people who take on vehicle checks because primarily these are vehicle driven, right? So you've got to keep them in good shape. So we do a lot of preventive maintenance. So we have some of us who do just vehicle checks. Then we have people who help with navigation. Again, expeditions come with uncertainty. So navigation is just not about turning on a Google map or, you know, and that's it. No, you need local input. You need condition of the road. These are very remote areas that are not very Googled out in that sense. So there is a navigation team that comes together and starts gathering these local inputs. And then there are people like even something just as simple as water to ensure that every person has 4 liters of water on a daily basis. is a task, and somebody takes responsibility for that. So it's a whole team coming together that makes it happen. It's really not, it's not something like a tour. I mean, it's as far as you can get from the sense of being a tour.
Could you, talk a bit about the food? I think most of the people on this trip will be Indians. And along with you, and I think the, like you said, the Indian palate is used to certain spices and certain types of food. And I'm sure you're not going to get dal and bhaji and chapatis, right? So do you think Indians will be keen enough to have horse meat?
That's the thing that Sati first spoke about. This person who's going to join us needs to come in with that mindset that is so flexible and adaptable that you will endure all that it takes. And interesting you talk about food, because on my solo in 2016, I think coming from where I was, having expeditioned in the past, I think I took food for granted to a large extent. And that seemed quite a challenge for me too. You know, you normally pride yourself and you think you can adapt. Well, try adapting to day on day on day of no spice and purely meat-based diets. The food there is primarily meat, because you don't grow anything in that area, right? Mm. Because the soil is permafrost. So it's a lot of fish, fresh fish, horse meat, a little bit of chicken, which is kind of an introduction. You find this in bigger towns. Bread, that's really hard. At some point it kind of just became bread and jam for me. But on this upcoming expedition, however, we're going to be a little better prepared. We will be taking some ready to eat stuff as well.
Okay.
And it'll be a bit of a balance or like I said, again, you know, the circus, food again will have to be planned out and will be catered for. But yeah, if you're expecting dal chawal and sabzi or dal roti or sabzi, not happening for a single day.
Definitely not.
There's no way I can.
Dal will be the delicacy.
Yeah. This might happen like once to just keep us calm from within.
So, you know, typically regions like this, we feel that, we also know that people lose that mind game, you know. And the mind starts playing tricks on them, wherein, you know, they'll completely lose it. And the worst qualities in them start coming up, you know, in situations like this where there's so much hardship. How are you prepared to kind of tackle with those situations?
I think it's about putting it in perspective for yourself and for your team. I would not call it the worst qualities, because that becomes a matter of judgment. But yes, what the outdoors and what such expeditions give you is a mirror, and you see yourself in the most naked form, not physically, but emotionally, mentally. You are true blue naked in front of your team. There is no scope for masking these kind of emotions. But as WBB, I think one of the things that we've known to do pretty well is manage the team. And do you want to share how we did this in Nagaland recently, Sati?
So, one of the biggest challenge and what we pride ourselves in as Team WBB is getting people from diverse locations, diverse cultures, diverse habits together, thrown into a conundrum, and to emerge successfully out of it as teams, to like a band of brothers. That is what we pride ourselves to specialize in. So the idea will be to make them a well-knit, cohesive team by the end of this expedition.
And there are ways in which we do this. Structurally, I think expeditions with WBB follow a couple of ground rules and processes. You know, the process being that every evening we have a very, very elaborate team meeting, irrespective of whether we've driven for 4 hours or 8 hours or 16 hours. Our team meetings are always a big high point in the day, because that's when we reflect, we appreciate, we reflect, we share concerns. We have a sacred space that we create to share discomfort as well, which is as important as voice. And so I think the team process per se is very well defined. And that helps put a lot in perspective, you know, be it an errant team member or his behavior that's bothering you, or be it that beautiful sight that just took your breath away and that kind of overshadowed the whole day, irrespective of all that it had. So I think your mind also starts putting these in perspective, you know, when you sit down and reflect at the end of the day about what happened.
How long is this trip totally?
This is 11 days. It's 10 days actually, you know, from Yakutsk to Magadan. Yakutsk is the start point in the Sakha Republic. So the team flies into Yakutsk. And from there, we have a short orientation. And from there, we start the drive on the Road of Bones towards Magadan, deviating, of course, to Oymyakon in between. And okay. We end in Magadan on the 20th of September. And 19th, we reach Magadan. 20th, they fly out. There are flights from Magadan to Moscow. And then they fly out of Russia from there.
So on an average, you're doing around 200 to 250 kilometers a day.
Yeah, but you know, it's a little skewed on such terrain. There are some days where you do just about 100, 120 and it takes you a whole day. Mm. And then there are some days you do 300, 400. But yeah, these are long driving days. Given that it's permafrost, what happens is the road, so like I explained to begin with, permafrost is three layers, right?
Yeah.
So the active layer of permafrost, it freezes and defreezes, which means the mornings it's slightly more frozen and as the day goes by, it defreezes with the sun. And which means it becomes slush and that's where your vehicles get stuck. And as evening progresses, then it starts freezing again.
So what's the best time to drive in which case during the day?
You definitely want to start early, you know, in terms of catching that frozen surface because that gives you better traction and, you know, it's a lot more traction for the wheel. And the slush is when it gets challenging, but you never know what the road has in store. So you prepare for both these situations.
What we've not spoken about is the things they can actually see, you know, something that's unique to that region. I think that's one thing we haven't covered. So, Colonel, would you want to kind of cover that?
Yeah. So, basically, one of the most important is the stop is the Oymyakon, which is the coldest inhabited place on Earth in the entire world.
To add, Oymyakon is a small habitation. Okay, so it is primarily a Yakutia habitation. So the Yakutia tribe, who were nomadic for the longest, now, as is with most tribes in the world, are far more settled and their nomad lifestyle happens only in the summers when they move out with their reindeers further north towards the Arctic and then they return. So this has less than about 1,000 people. I think what they will see in Oymyakon is how people just live. Their houses are built on, you know, one of the questions that I had when I went there was, how do you build a house on frozen earth? Because you want it defreeze, want it just collapse. So interestingly, you know, they actually scrape out the active layer and they reach the hard and they reach the passive layer, if not the hard ice, and then put their foundation with logs. So I think just life in this particular habitation is very interesting. How they cope with their drinking water needs, like the Indigirka River, which is right next door, has these hot springs. Those are like lifelines in the area because that's the only way you will get, you know, water and liquid form in the winters. So there are these hot springs and there are horse farms at Oymyakon because, again, horse meat is primary to their life. So how they breed horses to what people do. There's also a tiny reindeer and silver fox breeding farm at Oymyakon, which is quite interesting. I think life itself. So that's one big highlight.
Apart from that, we'll be taking a look at the woolly mammoth, the remnants basically, the permafrost, some regional historical museum, which have preserved the Ice Age remnants. These are completely out of the world sites.
This is stuff that you read in textbooks as kids, but to actually see it and to actually know that you're in one part of the earth wherein every third day there is a new remnant from the Ice Age that gets discovered just when somebody tried to dig something. I think it's fascinating to be in a land like that. Next, of course, are the gulags, the concentration camps, which have kind of become a tourist site in recent years. Just to know what, I mean, there are gulag museums. In Ustomchuk, there is a gulag museum, which is very interesting. To know the kind of people who were sent to the gulags, their backgrounds, how they lived, to what life must have been like. I think it comes closest to the the Auschwitz visit if you were in Poland.
And is there any wildlife that one can kind of expect in this, apart from, of course, horses and, I'm guessing, reindeers?
Yes, reindeers, foxes, bears. This is primarily what you should see. You will see, in fact, we see a lot of wildlife because these roads are quite remote. So if one is lucky, I think the first few cars definitely should catch a glimpse of these. But besides that, not too much lives out here.
Okay.
It's the raw nature in its pristine beauty, untouched by humans, untouched by so much of development. That is what is going to take everybody's breath away.
And it's going to be quite a different zone, right? When you come back to India after this trip, you're going to be in a different zone for a month at least.
Oh, not for a month. I think that that portion of your memory just gets tucked away into a special place because it's you will always relate with the Siberian experience. At least that's how I've been doing it. You know, when the going gets tough and you think it's not possible, and then your mind will tell you, look what you did there.
Why is somebody signing up for this? I mean, if you were to sum it up in one line, what would that be?
If you are a passionate driver, you have the courage to explore boundaries for yourself as a person, as well as what you can undertake at the wheel and outdoors. That should be reason enough to sign up for this expedition, because this is going literally to the edge of the world, will take you to places both within and outside which one you wouldn't have imagined.
I'd just say, if you are willing to push your boundaries both within as well as outside, then this is the place, or this is the place to go, and we are the people to go along with.
Could we also, you know, quickly come on some of the upcoming trips, you know, apart from the Pole of Cold?
Yeah.
I believe, you know, you've just completed the tour of Nagaland, and you're partnered with Mahindra Adventure for that, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yes. And post-Siberia, 1st to 12th of November, we are leading Mustang, Upper Mustang, Lumanthang, the road to Lumanthang for Mahindra Adventure again.
Wow.
Is doing that. And post that, we have a self-drive extreme overland to Uganda for 14 days. That's in December during Christmas and New Year.
Wow.
And that's beautiful again. Has a very different tone and feel wherein you're driving on game tracks and in between wildlife and whatnot. Post that, in February, we have a winter Kyrgyz drive coming up in Kyrgyzstan, which again is a very nice route. And May next year, we have Mongolia again. So we're currently in the midst of working out our annual calendar for 2020 as well.
Mm.
Yeah, but a lot lined up and a lot of excitement ahead.
You know, I was wondering, you know, after the Mongolia, and then you keep coming up with newer and newer places, and it's just quite amazing. because I think stuff like this, nobody does. And it's just amazing that you've been able to work out the entire thing to give an opportunity to people to go to another country, drive in their region, share all that experience that you kind of have gained, having done this yourself. I think that that's phenomenal. I mean, I don't think you could put a price to any of this.
Thank you, Vineet.
So, yeah, I mean, hats off to both of you. I think, I mean, as an entrepreneur myself in the space of travel technology, I mean, there are very few inspiring people who have actually done what they're talking about. And it's always a pleasure to talk to somebody, you know, who's been there, done that, and then doing something for the others. Because you come across so many people, you know, who are leading trips, who might have not even have that done that trip themselves. Which is quite a big problem right now in the industry, especially when you look at how we have flooded Ladakh with those bike trips, and, you know, and people get stranded there and people are just left behind. Which is kind of unfortunate.
In fact, because we've been doing this for so long, I think we're the only group, I mean, I can safely say so. So as far as the medical backup goes, you know, I don't think people even understand that remote area medicine or you know, the kind of emergency medicine practiced in when you're on such trips is very different from visiting a doctor or the kind of, like, you know, in a routine environment, in an urban environment. So, which is why one actually invested time and effort and energy into doing, a wilderness emergency medical technician course, which is, I think we're the only company who has a WEMT on board.
And we introduce people to emergency responses as a part of the introduction into the expedition on the first day itself.
We do a lot of orientation and which is what puts it in perspective and in sync for the team. You know, we're not one of those operators who just take people along and herd them and shepherd them from place to place. That doesn't happen with WBB. It's a very self-reliant kind of travel.
Once again, thanks a lot for joining in. This has been such a great conversation. There's so much that I've learned. Is it possible to plot a Google map for the route that you're doing? Is it possible? Or it are there no possible. Roads?
No. Yakuts to Magadan is possible, the Road of Bones.
Okay.
Oyapon doesn't get plotted on Google, but it's a short detour. The Yakuts to Magadan route is you know, it does show up on Google. What it doesn't tell you is how the road is, though. You know, we've tried to mark something as a route, and it's part of the PDF document on the website as well. I just wanted to add, Vineet, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for taking your time out to speak to Pavel Nomads.
My
like
pleasure
us.
Is all mine.
And great job with Scout My Trip. I think you're going places, and I think this was required in an industry where people don't realize the importance of scouting and planning and prep for a successful, drive.
Yeah.
So thank you for making inroads and actually bringing this to light. There needs to be this element to your travel.
Thank you so much for that, Nidhi. Thank you, Colonel, for joining in. And Nidhi, was a pleasure. Wish you all the best for this trip.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.